LibertyNation.com does not endorse candidates, campaigns, or legislation, and this presentation is no endorsement.
Protesters in Cuba have had it with their communist government and are protesting in the streets despite the consequences that many of them will face. Former Fox News and NBC host Megyn Kelly has gotten herself into a bit of hot water after she made controversial remarks on the January 6th riots. And Iranian agents are facing indictments for a plot to kidnap an American journalist on American soil. All coming up next on the Uprising Podcast.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15.
If we're in high school, I'd take you behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
His Twitter account should be suspended.
Right. You want to go to work? Go take the job as an essential worker. Do it tomorrow.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country. Maybe there will be when people realize.
I think possibly that's the most unattractive form in which prejudice can be met in this country, is the rage of the entitled.
I'm high as a kite in my garage and I can see through these guys.
Welcome to another episode of the Uprising Podcast, a production of LibertyNation.com, conservative news where truth matters. You might be noticing a little something different. Perhaps this is not quite the voice that you're used to, and this is because I am not your usual host, Mr. Scott Cosenza. My name is Jeff Charles, and I'm the sociopolitical correspondent with LibertyNation.com, and I will be guest hosting this edition of the Uprising Podcast today. It's a huge honor, huge honor. Thank you to Scott Cosenza for trusting me with your baby. Now, Scott's going to be back, don't worry, but right now he's probably off somewhere playing with his guns and doing all kinds of cool libertarian stuff. So you got me today, and we're going to have some fun. All right, so let's talk about Cuba. Let's talk about what's going on in Cuba. As you probably already know, a series of protests have broken out across the nation starting on this past Sunday. And it seems like the people of Cuba are sick and tired of this communist regime that has been oppressing them for decades. And they're making their views known. And what's notable about this is that, you know, in Cuba, you don't just, you know, protest against the government, right? I mean, just like other communist authoritarian regimes, you don't say anything against the government. But still, these people are still out there in full force. And what's interesting about this is the danger that these people are willing to put themselves into and what it says about the conditions that these people are going through. Another aspect that I want to talk about is how Democrats are responding to this. I mean, they're having to kind of toe a line that they really shouldn't have to be towing, but they are anyway. I mean, it is what it is when you embrace far left socialism or when you allow that to crop up in your party. It puts you in a very precarious situation when it comes to issues such as these. But before I get into all of that, I kind of want to, you know, give a little bit of background. And what I'm going to read from here is from the New York Times. And it's kind of giving an idea of what's going on. So the author writes, quote, "Hospitals and pharmacies have run out of medicines as basic as penicillin and aspirin. Blackouts have become maddeningly frequent and agonizingly long. Cubans lucky enough to have foreign currency wait in line for hours for staples like beans and rice." The article continues, quote, "A searing economic decline leading to hardships Cubans have rarely seen since the collapse of the Soviet Union devastated their country in the 1990s has stirred the island's largest protest movement in decades, eliciting a chorus of support from American politicians and angry threats from Cuba's government." Now, President Joe Biden and his administration are getting criticized for not seeming to have a forceful enough response to this. And I do think that a lot of that criticism is warranted. Now, on Monday, he released a statement that said, quote, "We stand with the Cuban people and their clarion call for freedom." And he cited what he called, quote, decades of repression and economic suffering to which they have been subjected by Cuba's authoritarian regime. Now, I want you to remember that word, authoritarian regime, because this is going to play into a point that I'm going to make later on. And you probably might, you may even already know where I'm going to go with this, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. Now, the report acknowledges that Biden's comments come after a wave of demonstrations, public demonstrations out in the streets ensued. Thousands of people were taken to the streets, and they were shouting phrases like freedom. They also shouted a homeland and life, which is a twist on the communist regime's motto, which is homeland or death, which is unintentionally accurate because it is a homeland and they are meeting out death through their policies over the past six decades. Now, these protests have not been fully peaceful. I mean, they've gotten rowdy. They overturned a police car. They looted a government-run store. And they're engaging in other acts of open defiance against this regime that, again, has been oppressing them for decades. Now, Cuba's president, his name is Miguel Diaz-Canel Bermudez, and he happens to be the first person running the country who isn't a Castro, who isn't a descendant of Fidel Castro or part of his family. And it's very interesting how he frames this whole thing, which you got to watch this because this is how leftists tend to frame things. And they know how to use language in a way that promotes a narrative that is deceptive, but favorable to their cause. So here's what Bermudez said. He said, quote, they'll have to walk over our dead bodies if they want to take on the revolution. So he's casting this as an aggressive act, an aggressive act against La Revolución, and casting himself and his government as the good guys who are fighting against oppression, essentially. And this is the type of language that they did use when they were attempting to overthrow the government back in the 60s. And he also said, quote, we're willing to do everything and we'll be on the streets battling. So they're casting themselves as the underdogs and the heroes when they're really the ones who are oppressing people. They're the ones who actually have the power, at least when it comes to military might. Now, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki also chimed in. She managed to circle back on this one. And she argued that the protests were a response to, quote, economic mismanagement and, quote, lack of vaccines. That's what's causing this whole thing. Okay, Jen Psaki. All right. Now, here's the thing. Let's just be real here, guys. Come on, let's just keep it real for a second. Mr. Magoo could see that there is more to this equation than economic mismanagement. Come on now. How about 62 years of violent oppression and violations of human rights and civil rights? How about the fact that these people are not even allowed to criticize their government? How about the fact that starvation has been rampant on the island? That they control the press? They don't allow people to read what they want to read, hear what they want to hear, or say what they want to say. You think that might have something to do with it? Maybe just a little bit. Just a little bit. Yeah, no, that is the reason why. It can't be expected that people are going to put up with this for decades without having some type of reaction. I mean, the threat of fear only goes so far. People are going to rise up and they're going to make themselves known one way or the other, even if they have to risk death to do it. And we see this in other countries that are governed by authoritarian regimes. We've seen it in Iran, right? Remember all those protests where people came out into the streets? We've seen it happen in Venezuela. We've seen it happen in the Soviet Union. I mean, and even in China to a certain extent. People, eventually, they get tired of not being free. So they react. Now, there's another aspect of this that is interesting. And the Washington Examiner, they point this out. And they reported what you may have already figured out. Both Jen Psaki and President Biden has talked about the authoritarian regime that is mistreating its people. So they're at least willing to go that far rather than outright defending them, like, you know, the global Black Lives Matter organization. Yeah. So here's what the Washington Examiner writes. Quote, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki was adamant President Joe Biden and his administration has been pretty clear that they believed Cubans were leaving and demonstrating because of their opposition to the Cuban government's oppression and mismanagement, but declined to blame the ideologies that so enraged conservatives. Socialism, however, has been embraced by some prominent members of the president's party, leaving him largely unable to denounce it. And this is the issue. President Joe Biden and the Democrats, the Democratic Party, this also applies to high-profile Democrats, high-profile leftists in the activist media, and in the active and in the chattering class. They refuse to refer to the fact that this nation is communist, that it is socialist, that it is Marxist in origin. This isn't just authoritarianism without an ideology. This is left-wing authoritarianism, and it has devastated the nation. It has devastated these people, with the exception of a few who managed to get in good with the Castro family and the Castro regime and the current government. They're doing fine, but everybody else is suffering. They're living in substandard conditions. Now, Psaki did say, quote, we support not just the role of protest and peaceful protest. We stand with the Cuban people in their call for freedom from both the pandemic and from decades of oppression and economic suffering to which they have been subjected by Cuba's, again, authoritarian regime. These people refuse to call this what it is. And like I said, you even have some people defending it. The squad has been pretty quiet on this. As of this recording, I haven't seen them say much of anything about what's going on in Cuba right now because they can't. They're socialists. They agree with this government on ideology. They agree with them largely on policy. I'm not saying that the squad is down with oppressing people. I'm not saying that they're good with that. I'm just saying that when it comes to political ideology, they are very much in line with the Cuban government. Now, here's the thing. Here's what's unfortunate about this whole thing. Because again, they're avoiding this like the plague. Like the Democrats, they are avoiding the hammer and sickle in the room as much as they possibly can. They don't want to admit that this has anything to do with socialism. President Joe Biden could easily come out and say, you know what? I'm on the left, but I'm not a communist. I don't agree with any of this stuff. I don't agree with the way the Cuban government is treating its people. It's atrocious, and we should find ways to punish them. But yes, this is the logical outworking of communism. Because President Joe Biden is not a communist. He could easily come out and say that, and that message would appeal to most of the country. Most people on the right, and yes, on the left too. Because not everybody on the left is a socialist. Not everybody on the left is a communist. In fact, we've seen that there are Democrats who push back against a lot of the Marxist ideas that the far left is trying to push through Congress, right? Now, Biden has made a shift to the left, I will say that. I mean, he's not the moderate that he portrayed himself as before, but I think a lot of that is because he's bowing to pressure. And then the people around him, there's the good chance that a lot of them are in line with the socialist cause. So we do see him pushing for these more radical type of policies on guns and on the border and on, you know, other issues. But here's the thing. How is this going to work out? I mean, a lot of people have been arrested. Actually, over 100 people have been arrested. And some came up missing. I know that they've shot at least one person. And how is this going to look for the Democrats and for the Biden regime that they're not forcefully condemning this? I'm not going to say that they're not saying anything about it. I just quoted them, but they're not nearly as forceful. Could you imagine what would happen if this protest erupted under Trump and all he did was release a written statement? Yeah, we know what would have happened. there would have been all kinds of fake outrage, wailing and gnashing of teeth. No, but Trump wouldn't have done that. He would have gotten in front of a camera and said, what's going on here is wrong. He would have roundly condemned this. And yeah, he would have called out the communism. And that, again, that is something that appeals to most of the American public, because most of the American public is not communist. So this will be yet another mistake that the Democrats are making, which, by the way, guys, we're kind of in a weird era here. The Democrats are making a lot of stupid mistakes that are going to alienate voters come 2022, 2024. And this is not normal. I'm not saying that the Democrats are always on top of things. They're not. But it's like they're doing stupid thing after stupid thing and allowing people in their party to promote stupid ideas that the American public does not want. Defund the police is an example. It's designed to protect Black people, but 81% of Black people don't want to defund the police. They want police in our communities. That's just one example. I mean, look. I could go on and on about this, but the bottom line is, they're pushing these ideas. They're pushing a voting law that would allow the federal government to control elections instead of leaving it up to the states. That's not as popular as they want us to think it is. So this is just yet another issue where people will look at the Biden administration and give the president the side eye, because it's like, well, wait, you can't condemn this? Like, you can't come out in force? Like, are you even a little bit mad about what's going on? Do you feel anything for these people at all? I mean, I get that we don't expect him to invade Cuba. You know, we don't want another Bay of Pigs situation. But at the same time, we should be at the forefront of condemning this government and, yeah, maybe seeking ways to punish them. But the Democrats forgot how to read the room. And they have not been this incompetent. And anytime that I remember, I'm still a young guy, but I don't remember them being this incompetent with the way they handle these issues. But, you know, as they say, you know, when your enemy is, I can't remember how the saying goes. basically, if your enemy is hurting themselves, then don't interfere. Okay, so we'll keep an eye on this, and we'll keep an eye on how the Democrats continue to mess this whole thing up. And next, we're going to talk about Megyn Kelly. Now then, former Fox News host and NBC host Megyn Kelly has gotten herself into a little bit of trouble after she made some comments on her podcast, which is called The Megyn Kelly Show. I actually just started listening to her podcast. It's pretty good. I would recommend it. She interviews a lot of very interesting guests and on interesting subjects. And, you know, Megyn Kelly's been around for a while. She knows what she's doing. And in this instance, she showed that she still knows how to trigger the left. And it's funny because I was listening to this episode and she was speaking with a comedian named Chrissy Mayer. She's also more of a Trump-supporting personality as well, although she used to be on the left. But I heard this podcast, and when she made these comments, I knew that this was going to be a controversy. I knew that there was going to be a huge outpouring of fake outrage and pearl clutching. I mean, and I was right, as usual. When she made these comments, the activist media and Democrats were bleeding from their wherever because they were so mad about this. Now, I'm not going to quote her. I'm going to let you hear what she said. We can go ahead and roll the clip.
A faction turned, and there's no question the media represented this as so much worse than it actually was. But, you know, we've all seen the video of people like screaming in the face of cops, being totally disparaging and, you know, defecating on the floor of the U.S. Capitol.
That's
and
crazy.
You know, lawmakers were understandably afraid, you know, not like AOC, I need therapy for the rest of my life, afraid, but I could understand it. And I didn't like seeing it at all. That's our Capitol. Get the hell out of there. Have some respect. Don't threaten the cops. Screw you. You know, the MAGA crowd is supposed to be pro cop, you know, and you don't get in their faces and yell at them and say that, you know, all this shitty stuff, which I heard, you know, with my own ears.
That's
but
crazy.
That
yeah,
doesn't
I didn't
mean
see any of that. Yeah.
That doesn't mean that's what the entire crowd was there for, intended to do. So they got tarred by the actions of like some losers who went a different way. And then the media did what it does, which is any bad behavior gets attributed to the entire group of Trump supporters,
of
not
course.
Just in on the Capitol, but in the country. Right. Remember? After that, it was like, you're a MAGA supporter, you're a Trump supporter, you're on the banned list.
Yeah, so you see what I mean, right? I mean, you can see how this elicited supposed outrage on the left. I mean, you had all kinds of left-wing activist media organizations crying about it, like I said, clutching their pearls. The pearl necklace industry is going to be doing very well because these people are going to have to spend a lot of money to replace the pearl necklaces that they broke because they clutched them too hard. And here's what's interesting. Of course, they said that Megyn Kelly was downplaying the Capitol riots, even though she wasn't. They made it seem like she was trying to make it sound like it wasn't a big deal at all, and that, you know, we shouldn't even be paying attention to it. However, that's not what she said. She said that it was bad, but that the left-wing activist media and the left in general were exaggerating it and hyping it up to use it for political purposes. Now, she also pointed out that most of the crowd that was present at the Capitol after they listened to Trump's speech did not engage in any rioting or looting. And I've heard from people who were there and they didn't even know there was a riot until the next day when they found out on the news, because that's how big this crowd was and that's how small of a percentage of people there were actually engaging in these activities. Again, I'm not saying it's not bad. Like, what? Here's what I'm not saying. I'm not saying that this wasn't an issue. What they did was horrible. They were thugs. They deserve to be punished. At least the ones who actually took place in the looting, in the breaking of windows, and beating up cops, because a lot of cops were injured. I don't know how seriously, but still. I mean, we don't want to see that. I have the same energy for this riot as I do for the George Floyd riots. They're both wrong. Neither are justified. I do think that one is worse than the other. Frankly, the ones that happened last summer that killed more people, destroyed a lot more property, but that's a different issue. But that does not mean that we have to defend the people who engaged in this activity. I disagree with some of the Republican politicians who were pretending that it wasn't a big deal, that it was like these people were just going on a tour or what have you. No, I saw the footage. That's not what was happening. Yes, there were a lot of people who were let in by the police and they were just kind of looking around. I don't know what they'll be charged with. I don't think they should be charged with rioting if they weren't engaging in violence, maybe trespassing at the most. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is there were people there who were trashing the place and who were destroying property, breaking windows, and fighting with police. And by the way, some of these people are not being treated very well by our justice system. They're not being treated the way they should be by our justice system. And that's wrong no matter who it is based on political affiliation. I don't care if you're a card-carrying member of Black Lives Matter. You don't need to be kept in solitary confinement, you know, forced to strain water through a sock so that you can drink it. No, no, no. We are not a third world country. We are the United States of freaking America. So that's an issue. But with what Megyn Kelly was saying, what they did on the left is they took it out of context. Like they forgot to include something else that she put in her podcast. Before she made those comments, she played a clip of MSNBC's Matthew Dowd, who went on the air and said with a straight face that the riots at the Capitol were, quote, worse than 9/11, because it's continued to rip our country apart and give permission for people to pursue autocratic means. Yeah, you heard me. You heard me. You heard that right. Matthew Dowd claimed that the riots at the Capitol were worse than the 9/11 terrorist attacks that killed over 3,000 Americans, both on the same day and then later due to other health issues that people suffered, resulted in two wars, one of which we are just now starting to end. And somehow what these people did when they went in and you know, stole Nancy Pelosi's laptop and took a podium and put their feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk, that is somehow worse than flying planes into the Twin Towers, which also sparked a wider a radical extremist terrorist movement across the world. It's responsible for tons of deaths. And it traumatized the nation, changed the way that we do things. It It reformed the international landscape. But yeah, some people in MAGA hats, you know, tearing up the Capitol building. Yeah, that's worse. Again, it was bad. But this is the context that she was making her remarks in. She was saying that people claiming that 9/11 wasn't as bad as the Capitol riots are full of it. And you know what? She's right. And, you know, before people say, well, it was just Matthew Dowd who said that, so it wasn't even worth discussing. Nope. Matthew Dowd is not the only person saying that 9/11 wasn't as bad as the Capitol riots, which, by the way, it really demeans the experiences of the families of the victims. I doubt that any one of these people would walk up to the mother of who lost a child in the World Trade Center and say, yeah, but that was Capitol. It gets slapped in the face. So, like I said, Dowd is not the only person to make this claim. USA Today published a piece claiming that Republicans are a bigger threat than the 9/11 hijackers. President Joe Biden called the incident the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War, which, by the way, he says that he's starting to pretty much say that about everything. I mean, this phrase is to Joe Biden what worse than Watergate is to Carl Bernstein. It's like, you know, if Joe Biden doesn't like something, then it just happens to be the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War. It's weird. I don't know if he just can't remember that he's using this phrase for everything else or what, or if he, I don't know, but I digress. The Metro Times also published a piece claiming that the Capitol riots were worse than the 9/11 terror attacks. Now, these are only a few examples, guys. I found a lot. All I had to do was go on Google, and I could have just kept scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and seeing more and more examples of people on the left making this claim. And that doesn't even count social media. I can go on Twitter right now and do a search, and I guarantee you I will find some blue check marks, some high-profile people on the left pretending that the Capitol riots were worse than the 9/11 terror attacks. Now, this is what Megyn Kelly was saying. She was saying there is absolutely no way to argue this. It's a stupid thing to say. So in that context, Megyn Kelly's comments were not nearly as egregious as the left wants you to think. But here's the thing. They're counting on people to not listen to her podcast in context to see what she was saying. I mean, I even brought this up on Twitter. And I had a couple leftists push back on me and actually try to convince me that 9/11 wasn't as bad as the riots. But for the most part, people know that that's a load. But when they have the full context, now they know, okay, well, I may not even agree with Megyn Kelly, but there's no way that this is as bad as 9/11. And I'm sure that if I had a conversation with Megyn Kelly, I might think the riots are a bigger deal than she does, but I still agree that it's not as crazy as what they're trying to make it sound. And this goes back to what I was saying a few minutes ago. The left are making fools of themselves. Again, most people on the left and the right aren't going to pretend that what happened on January 6th is even in the same league as what happened on 9/11. The very idea is absurd. And the fact that they responded so viscerally to what Megyn Kelly said is telling, because they know the context. They know why she was saying what she was saying, and they're lying about it. But that tells me that they are willing to even entertain these ideas. They're willing to actually defend people who are saying, who are demeaning and diminishing the experience that people had on 9/11. This is not a good look for them, but they just can't help themselves, can they? Now then, I came across a very interesting story the other day, and this story is kind of flying under the radar. It's not being hyped up as much as I think it should be. Now, this isn't a case where the activist media isn't reporting on it. I mean, the major establishment media outlets have published reports on it. So it's not like they're paying no attention to it. But I think it deserves more attention because it is quite disturbing. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that you would think would be in a movie and not something that might actually happen. But it's pretty wild. So on Tuesday, the Department of Justice announced that it was indicting members of Iranian intelligence services for a plot to kidnap an American journalist and human rights activist. Now, they were levying these charges against four Iranian nationals, and these charges include conspiracy related to kidnapping, sanctions violations, bank and wire fraud, and money laundering. Now, according to the DOJ report, which I would encourage you to look, because I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's pretty extensive and it's pretty detailed, but I'm going to give you some snippets. According to court documents, these four people, and they range in age from 42 to 50, these people, quote, conspired to kidnap a Brooklyn journalist, author, and human rights activist for mobilizing public opinion in Iran and around the world to bring about changes to the regime's laws and practices. Now, the name of the journalist, her name is Masih Alinejad. I've actually been following her for a little while. And she uses her platform to call out the atrocities that the Iranian regime commits. She has been a vocal critic of President Hassan Rouhani and of the mullahs. And she has been a very stern critic of the Islamic Republic of Iran in general. Now, U.S. Attorney Audrey Strauss, she's from the Southern District of New York. She stated that the defendants, quote, monitored and planned to kidnap a U.S. citizen of Iranian origin who has been critical of the regime's autocracy and to forcibly take their intended victim to Iran, where the victim's fate would have been uncertain at best. Yeah, I think we can be pretty certain that she either would have been executed or imprisoned. They weren't going to do anything nice to her. But I know they have to, you know, couch things in those terms. But the indictment alleges that this plot to kidnap Masih Alinejad came directly from Tehran, came directly from the Iranian government, quote, as retaliation for their freedom of expression. Now, this is according to Assistant Director Alan E. Kohler Jr. of the FBI's Counterintelligence Division. Now, Alinejad, who is very active on Twitter, that's how I found her, because I live on Twitter too. I know. But she went on Twitter and she posted a video. And in the video, in the caption, she says that she's grateful to the FBI for foiling the Islamic Republic of Iran's intelligence ministry's plot to kidnap me. This plot was orchestrated under Rouhani. Now, the video, I would play it for you, but she is speaking in Farsi, so we wouldn't understand her. But there are subtitles, and in this video, she explains that a few weeks ago, all of these law enforcement and FBI officers showed up at her home, and they stationed themselves outside of her home for 2 weeks. And they didn't even tell her right away why they were present. I mean, they said, you know, we're here to protect you. They let her know that. But they didn't give her the in-depth information until later when they finally informed her of this whole plot that was going on. And again, she was very grateful for what they did, but I mean, it's intense. And you can see, you know, when she, in the video, she is next to her window and she's pointing her camera out and you can see the FBI vehicles on the street. Scary, right? It's very scary. But it gets even more interesting. So according to the Justice Department statement, the planning for this operation began in June of 2020. And of course, this was part of an effort to silence her because of her criticism of the Iranian government. I mean, the government has even victimized members of Alinejad's family. So she has a personal stake in this too. Now, here's what the report says. It says, quote, in approximately 2018, Iranian government officials attempted to induce relatives of Victim One. Victim One is Alinejad, by the way. They attempted to induce relatives of Victim One who resides in Iran. To invite the victim to travel to a third country for the apparent purpose of having Victim One arrested or detained and transported to Iran for imprisonment. So what they were doing is they were trying to put relatives of Alinejad up to trying to lure her to another country because it'd be easier for them to do a rendition operation on her there to pick her up in a different country. Now, luckily, the relatives did not comply. Now, an electronic device that was used by one of the operatives contained photos of Alinejad with two other individuals. Both of these people, the other two people, had been successfully lured to other countries using this tactic. And they were, unfortunately, they were both captured. One of them was executed, the other is imprisoned. And there was a caption on one of the pictures in Farsi, and it read, quote, gradually the gathering gets bigger. Are you coming or should we come for you? Now, according to the statement released by the DOJ, these people undertook an extensive surveillance operation that they used to keep track of Alinejad's movements. They even went so far as to use American private investigators to help them keep tabs on her. And obviously it's great that they didn't succeed. I mean, we can all be glad that the authorities discovered and foiled the plot. But it does raise a question. Since when does a country like Iran work up the gumption to attempt the abduction of an American citizen on American soil? Again, this is like James Bond type of stuff, where you go to a country and you pick up somebody and you get them out of the country so you can bring them to justice, although in this case it would be injustice. And at first I was thinking, well, I mean, maybe they obviously were emboldened to do this. Was it the prospect of a weak president maybe taking over? I mean, the thing is, they started concocting the scheme in 2020. And we don't necessarily know when they actually plan to pull this off. That might come out later. But it is possible that they came up with a scheme and they said, you know, let's wait until after the election. And maybe if Biden's president, we won't have to deal with consequences from this. That is possible. I'm not saying that's definitely it. That's just a theory that is possible. But here's the thing. Another important question that we need to ask is, could this be the start of a trend in which Iran starts flexing its muscles more frequently and more aggressively? And when I say flexing its muscles, I don't mean that they're going to be sending more operatives to kidnap a bunch of American journalists, although I wouldn't rule that out, but they can flex their muscles in other ways, like maybe threatening our interests abroad or finding other ways to poke the bear, so to speak. Now, here's another interesting reality. As of this recording, President Joseph Robinette Biden has issued no statement condemning the kidnapping plot. He has said nothing about this. Not even Circleback Saki has commented on this yet, and I don't know if they will. In fact, and this is ironic, I don't think that this was planned, but I mean, it's very ironic. On the day that the news broke, which was Tuesday, President Biden waived sanctions on Iran, which allows their government to gain access to funds from South Korea and Japan. So it's fairly obvious that Biden is a lot friendlier to Iran than obviously his predecessor was, right? It's not hard to see, and it's not hard to predict either. I mean, anybody could have seen that coming. and even worse, even though Even though Iran was busted trying to kidnap an American citizen, he still wants to move forward with the resurrection of the nuclear deal. You know, it's almost like when President Obama, I wrote about this a while ago, a few years ago, President Obama, you know, shut down investigations into Hezbollah and their illicit and their involvement in illicit international crime syndicates, namely drugs. He shut down that investigation because he didn't want to piss off the Iranian regime because he wanted to get this deal going. And that allowed Hezbollah to grow immeasurably more powerful. I mean, they are their operations are so extensive now because the Obama administration didn't want to do anything about it because they didn't want to jeopardize this deal. The same thing is going to happen here. Biden isn't going to hold them accountable. I mean, if he does, if he surprises me, I will praise him. I will give him the compliment. I will give him the props. But we all know that ain't going to happen, right? I mean, he wants this nuclear agreement. He wants to put this back in place. He can possibly use it as an accomplishment because the Biden administration is short on accomplishments. They haven't accomplished much since he got into the White House. But here's the scary part. If Iran was willing to be this bold while Trump was still in office, how much worse will they get when they know that they're dealing with a president who is not going to stand up to them? How much further will they go when they know that there's a man in the Oval Office who is friendlier to their objectives? It's not something any of us want to think about, but while we get distracted by other issues that are important too, you know, we have to watch what our president is doing. The fact that he can't even make a statement on this when Iran tried to commit to abduct a U.S. citizen, and she is of Iranian origin, she's Persian, but she got her citizenship, so she's one of ours. The fact that he can't even make a statement on that is obscene. It's appalling. I couldn't imagine Trump doing anything like that. Like, you know, he would have something to say about it. And he would probably do something about it. Like, Iran would suffer if they had actually tried this under Trump and it was discovered. it's just amazing how far a lot of Democrats will go to, I don't know, I mean, appease one of our enemies. It really doesn't make sense. And it's not going to benefit us. It's only going to benefit Iran. And that's something that we need to keep in mind, especially when the midterms roll around. Biden will still be in office, or maybe he'll have stepped down and Kamala Harris will take over. But Republicans, this is yet another reason why you need to make sure that you're on your game, because we at least need a Congress that isn't going to go along with Biden's effort to appease the mullahs. I mean, it's gross. And then, of course, there's 2024, when we need to make sure that Democrats are out of that office as well, because they have shown that they are willing to potentially place us in danger and to refuse to stand up to our enemies for political expediency. Well, that's it for this edition of the Uprising Podcast. Please remember to hit Liberty Nation News for original articles, this podcast, and the Rabbit Hole Podcast, and our signature television program, The Conservative Five. Just go to libertynation.com on your browser, or hit Rumble, YouTube, or check out our Liberty Nation News Roku channel. I'm Jeff Charles. Thanks for listening. This program is a production of libertynation.com, conservative news where truth matters.
Who are we? We are Americans that believe in liberty. We are a project of the nonprofit One Generation Away. We are patriots who apply the founding principles to the issues of today.
And they keep moving the goalposts on us.
We are educators and commentators who love America and the Constitution. Who are we? We are Liberty Nation.